Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on September 11, 2017. My guest today is Director of Developer Relations with Smartsheet and Internet Busybody, Ted Neuward. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Thanks for coming on again. I've been talking a lot of JavaScript this year with my guests, and I'm a bit tired of it, frankly. but what else can I do? It's the only thing that runs in a browser, right?
Yeah. We'll go with that as an answer. That's a safe answer.
But there are some other options out there to let you at least write in something other than JavaScript. Some of these transpilers. Can you explain what a transpiler is?
A transpiler is a software tool, like a compiler. But the difference between a compiler and a transpiler is that where a compiler will take your source code and transform it into some binary artifact, transpiler will go source to source. For example, your traditional C++ compiler takes your C++ source and turns it into whatever the target binary format is for your particular platform, an ELF binary if you're on Linux, or a COF or PE file format if you're on Windows. A transpiler will take your C++ source and turn it into something else. And interestingly enough, the original C++ compiler called Cfront was a transpiler. It went from C++ source to C source, which you then used the local C compiler to compile from there. It's a very long history. JavaScript has boatloads of transpilers out right now. But this is definitely not something that is just new and unique to the JavaScript world. It definitely has a long and rich history. And as a matter of fact, many, if not most, languages often begin life as a transpiler. You know, let me just transform A to B, and then I'll compile B, and I'll now have running code.
We'll talk about a couple of them. Transpilers in general kind of make me nervous, especially for the web or something that runs in a web browser. There's been a history of some leaky abstractions on the web. So one of my concerns is debugging. Is this going to be hard to debug based on the browser I'm using?
It really depends on a couple of different factors. Usually the browser won't be one such factor as long as your transpiler is able to target that particular browser environment. So for example, one of the benefits of using a transpiler is to use a modern language that supports block scope variables and so forth in an implementation of JavaScript that dates back, you know, the implementation of JavaScript for Internet Explorer 6, for example, it's the old JavaScript that all of us still have nightmares about. But I can use a transpiler to sort of hide the fact that I'm working with this really ancient implementation. And so really the debugging experience there really should be less of an overhead of a concern when you're debugging something in IE6 when you're using a transpiled language. That assumes, of course, that there's no bugs in the transpiler itself, which is always a possibility, but certainly something that's used more than something else. The greater amount of usage generally yields the lesser amount of bugs, million pairs of eyes and all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you do need to go debug in the browser, again, this depends on what the transpiler is doing in terms of the level of human readability in the resulting output. So, for example, if we look at TypeScript, which is that's Microsoft's transpiler that effectively adds strong typing to traditional ECMAScript 2016 syntax, most of the resulting output is actually extremely readable. It's actually like 98% of the time something that you would imagine a human had written, except maybe for some of the variable names that they end up synthesizing. I've certainly seen some transpilers that effectively treat JavaScript as a binary format. As a matter of fact, there's a transpiler called mscripten that will take C++ source and turn it into JavaScript, specifically targeting another library called asm.js, which is the precursor to WebAssembly. And asm.js said, we're going to provide a set of effectively targets that look like assembly instructions. So the stuff that was coming out of mscripten, I mean, you really had to be a GCC implementer to understand some of the source code that it was producing, particularly when you got into some of the gnarlier parts of C++. It's really going to be one of those things that you can choose to put yourself on the end of the spectrum that says even the transpiled output will be easy to debug by selecting the right transpiler and by selecting the right browser environments that you target. This is always going to be kind of a trade-off. And again, in 98% of the cases, you'll never actually want to look at the generated output because you would want to debug in your original source language. Most of the modern browsers have the ability to manage map files, which will let them map one line of output over to one line of your source input, and that will help you from having to look at the actual generated transpiled output.
So I want to come back to WebAssembly in a bit here. I'm very interested about that, but I want to ask you about, you mentioned TypeScript already. The first JavaScript transpiled language I was ever aware of was called CoffeeScript. Is that still a going concern? I feel like I haven't heard about it much as opposed to TypeScript recently.
I mean, these things move in waves. There's going to be something that people get really, really excited about, and then everybody's kind of like, oh, look, bright, shiny over there. Oh, look, bright, shiny over there. We are effectively an industry of dogs chasing after squirrels. And CoffeeScript, I think in particular, I don't use CoffeeScript on a day-to-day basis, but part of that is because the CoffeeScript syntax is very appealing to Ruby developers, and I'm a Ruby novice. I still have to look a whole bunch of stuff up when I try to sit down and write Ruby code. I do not consider myself an expert in any way, shape, or form. But I think if I spent more time in the Rails community, I would find a number of people who really like using CoffeeScript because CoffeeScript was deliberately written to pull in a lot of those Ruby syntax and concepts. TypeScript, on the other hand, is more appealing to the more statically typed crowd. So if you're a .NET developer, if you're a Java developer, the notion of strong typing, the notion of having a compiler slash transpiler that can give you type-based errors before your code gets deployed to runtime. Oh man, we've been wanting that for years in the JavaScript world. That finally fixes JavaScript. The other thing that I think is driving a lot of the public perception of TypeScript is the fact that in a move that absolutely, I mean, you want to talk about a jaw-dropping, how did we get here move, Google and Microsoft working together on an open source project, Angular. Nobody would have predicted that 5 years ago. I think that is driving a lot of people's perception of TypeScript, the fact that it's all in the open source world, the fact that Microsoft, they have paid salaried employees working on it, the fact that Anders Halsberg, the guy who wrote C#, was sort of the principal driver behind the initial versions of TypeScript, the fact that some of the big compiler brains from the C# team are working on TypeScript. Microsoft is clearly throwing a lot of engineering effort at this, as opposed to one guy who's doing this as an open source project on his free time. That's what my understanding was for CoffeeScript. That definitely makes a bit of a difference too, particularly with corporations. If you're a corporation and you're looking at, do we adopt CoffeeScript as sort of our language of choice for doing JavaScript-related stuff, which is supported by one guy in his garage, or do we support TypeScript, which is Microsoft, and they're going to build tooling around it and all that other stuff? I think that's part of what's driving the difference of opinion there. Everybody has to make that decision for themselves. I think there are a lot of people out there who are still very happy, very comfortable. They prefer the CoffeeScript syntax because they like working with a dynamic language running on top of a dynamic platform. They're very happy. I mean, at a certain point, languages don't decay. Software does not decay. The C compiler is every bit as good now as it was 20 years ago. It's arguably a lot better because whatever bugs were in the compiler have been squashed in the meantime. And at a certain point, it's reasonable for a language designer to say, you know what? I'm done. The language does what I want it to do, and I don't want to cram too many features into the language. So as long as there's still bugs being fixed, if the language hasn't significantly altered in 3 years, that's not a terrible thing. That's actually success. We're done. We've got it working. It does what we need it to do. We're finished. We don't want to cram more stuff into the language if it doesn't need it.
That doesn't really make headlines, though, when it's, oh, CoffeeScript, no new release because it's already fine. That doesn't really get upvoted on Reddit, let's say.
Well, yeah, because we're a nation of dogs chasing squirrels, right? as an industry, we are constantly chasing the bright shiny. This is one of the things that I've actually been talking about for a number of years is, you know, software that's done is not necessarily bad. We actually create more problems for ourselves by not accepting that fundamental truth. We insist on using stuff that is constantly undergoing churn, and then we complain when they introduce breaking changes or when they introduce new versions, and it's like, yeah, we want it to be done when we want it to be done, but not before and not after. At a certain point, it's kind of like, you know, maybe we just kind of need to collectively grow up. Maybe a little maturity would be a good thing here, as opposed to constantly chasing the hot new version.
You mentioned Emscripten, and we've talked about CoffeeScript and TypeScript. Are there any other transpiled JavaScript languages out there that we should know about?
Oh, geez, there's dozens. There's a number of languages that will compile to JavaScript. For example, JetBrains just released Kotlin, which is sort of their entry into the JVM language world. Most notably, Kotlin is, it looks like it's going to become sort of the de facto standard for doing software development on Android, but Kotlin also has a mode where it can compile to JavaScript. There's a language called FAN, F-A-N, which is an interesting language in its own right, but it has a mode where it can compile to JavaScript. There's a couple of different, I think, implementations of what Adobe called Flex that will be able to compile over to JavaScript now that the Adobe runtime platform, Adobe Air, Flex used to compile to and what Flash was planning to run on as well. You know, now that that platform has basically gone the way of the dodo bird, Adobe is starting to look at ways to transform a lot of that Flash-related stuff over to JavaScript and HTML5. There's dozens, hundreds of them out there. Are any of these languages that people should know? It depends on how much of a language aficionado you are. Me, I love languages. I'm absolutely enthralled with them. There is no programming language I won't spend some time playing around with just for fun. Yeah, if I were to start rattling off the list of languages that I've bookmarked in my browser, we would be here 3 days later, and I would still be going. So there's always interesting languages. Google has another one called Dart, which is another attempt at a strongly typed JavaScript. Dart actually just recently released a platform/library called Flutter, specifically for creating mobile applications across both the Android and iOS platforms. So, yeah, there's a bunch. Just Google languages, compile JavaScript, and start winding your way through the umpteen million results that will come back.
If you want to know more about Kotlin, check out an episode of Cross-Cutting Concerns with Michael Yodov. He talked all about Kotlin in that episode. I'll put a link to that in the show notes at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Okay, I want to talk about options for running languages in the browser that don't involve transpiling. So options we have now or options that are coming soon. You know, maybe not a plugin like Silverlight. Maybe we shouldn't talk about that. Mentioned WebAssembly. Is there anything in there for us that don't want to actually use JavaScript, even behind the scenes?
WebAssembly just recently reached a 1.0 standard. This has been an ongoing carousel of experimentation. In the beginning, in the early days of the browser, we obviously had Java applets, and that was certainly a possibility for doing client-side execution inside the browser. And that was actually the first, back in those days when the browsers were new, was when JavaScript first emerged. And originally, as I understand it, legends and lore hold that the guys that created JavaScript originally wanted it to look like Scheme. And the folks at Netscape said, no, not Scheme. We've got to have something that looks curly brackets and semicolons and so forth. It's got to be something that's more friendly to the more mainstream programmers. You know, this Java thing looks like it could be cool. Make it look like that. And so part of the reason that everyone's so down on JavaScript is because in many respects, it is actually a Lisp with curly brackets, but it didn't really commit to either of those two paths, which is why it ended up charting kind of its own path. But obviously, we've seen Silverlight, as you mentioned. We've seen Adobe Flash. There was a time, and as a matter of fact, still is, where you can actually create native extensions within the browser. So if you want to create a Chrome plugin, there is the NACL SDK from Google that will let you build Chrome extensions, Chrome plugins. That was a way to effectively drive the browser from Chrome, you know, not just within the page, but within the entire environment that contains the page. like, for example, your Chrome debugging tools are likely written in this extension SDK. Microsoft, for a long time, had a C++-based API for being able to build extensions inside of Internet Explorer or Edge or whatever they're calling the browser these days. Netscape had something similar as well. There's been a long, rich history, but the problem with all of these has fundamentally been twofold. A, it's been natively compiled code, which means it's very sensitive to any mistake will crash the entire browser. And B, it's natively compiled code, which means you have to know the target architecture, you have to know the operating system, you have dozens of different targets you have to compile for, and putting the right one on the end user's machine can sometimes be tricky. The WebAssembly specification is trying to put a final stamp on, this is the destination we always wanted to arrive at, this is a standard way of doing execution inside the browser, but in a manner that allows for a higher degree of optimization and potentially being able to call out of the web page. But the WebAssembly, the beginnings of it, just reached 1.0, I think it was like a month or two ago. The beginnings of it is to say, let's just create a target compiled format that can execute inside of modern browsers so that we don't necessarily have to optimize JavaScript per se. In the ideal world, JavaScript will eventually compile to WebAssembly and everybody will simply execute WebAssembly. And now you can use whatever languages you'd like that compile to WebAssembly. And so we can finally stop maligning JavaScript for having been accidentally successful. Whether or not it takes off will depend a great deal on the browser manufacturers as well as the community uptake. If nobody embraces it and everybody continues to transpile to JavaScript and the browser manufacturers, if they look around and say, wow, nobody seems to be using this thing, so we could rededicate the resources within the team to go work on other things. Let's go work on WebGL or let's go work on our own implementation of something. This is the big question for a standard is a standard is not useful unless people are using it. Will there be tools that will let us produce WebAssembly? Will the browsers consume it and produce it? Will the browsers actually produce better runtime results using WebAssembly than we would with just transpiling the JavaScript? A lot of questions up in the air right now along those lines, but the standard itself is actually pretty good. I've looked at it. I've read through the specs. I've experimented a little bit. There are a number of compilers that are experimenting with producing WebAssembly results. There's some reference implementations people can download and work with. There's definitely some high-powered engineering that goes into this, so I'm cautiously optimistic that this will actually turn into a thing.
Would you go out on a limb and say that maybe like a top 20 or top 50 website would use WebAssembly in the next, say, year in production?
Probably not. Not within the next year. A large part of it will depend what happens with the mobile browsers. If iOS and Android, if the browsers there, if they get native WebAssembly support, that's when the top 50 websites will start thinking about it. And then the second criteria to really drive their adoption is, will it be faster to execute WebAssembly than it will be to execute JavaScript? The day that WebAssembly can be a little bit faster than JavaScript is the day the big sites will start moving over to use it.
Have you used a transpiler? I know you mentioned you're not really into CoffeeScript or Ruby, but have you used TypeScript or another transpiler on a project, and how did it go?
Talk to me in a year or so. At Smartsheet, we actually have about 500,000 lines of 10-year-old JavaScript. The company started 10 years ago before jQuery was a thing. We are working with plain vanilla JavaScript against a naked DOM. We are just getting started migrating our JavaScript over to TypeScript. We are learning a few lessons along the way, as one might imagine. A lot of the engineers here are very, very excited about doing that because a lot of them have been frothing at the mouth at trying to get something a little bit more modern in place. Because we're a startup, but we are currently, we're about $150 million short of being a billion-dollar unicorn. We have the engineering manpower now. We have the resources to be able to contemplate doing this switch, but obviously we can't call a halt to all feature work and do this migration and move over. We're jumping the train to a different set of tracks as we go. But the engineers so far have actually been pretty positive about it. They're pretty excited. We've got a new feature rolling out that's being written entirely in TypeScript from the ground up, and that experience has been pretty positive. It's not yet 500,000 lines of source code, that particular feature, but it's probably somewhere in the five-digit range, if I had to guess. The engineers working on it are like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. Over the next year, one of the engineers is going to be blogging on the Smartsheet developer blog, developers.smartsheet.com. He's going to be writing some articles specifically talking about this transition that we're going through, starting with how did we convince our management that this was the thing that we needed to do. We're pretty excited about making the move over to TypeScript. Me personally, I'm writing in a column series for Microsoft MSDN Magazine on Angular, and that's all been in TypeScript, and I've done a couple of workshops and labs and so forth on TypeScript. I like the language, but as a general rule, I like lots of languages. I mean, that uncle who's got like 47 nephews, and he loves playing with all of them. They're all different. They're all in various stages of their growth and development, but I love all the languages. They're awesome, even LolCode.
Are there any resources you recommend for someone who wants to learn more about transpilers or TypeScript or CoffeeScript?
Well, the individual languages obviously go to their respective websites, TypeScript.org, I think it is, and CoffeeScript.org, and you know, a couple other. I'm sure there, you know, for any language you're considering, there is a website to go with it. That's going to be a first place to go. If you're interested about learning transpilers in general, this is the realm of programming language design. Oh, my goodness, the resources there are just too numerous to count. There's a number of really good books. The Dragon Book, the A. Hosethi Ullman book, classic computer science text, talking about the basics of compilers, you know, lexing, tokenizing, parsing, bringing it into an intermediate representation. And then from there, a transpiler, the code generation step would produce source code, whereas in a traditional compiler, that would produce binary. But a lot of this is just straight up compiler theory. And frankly, if you've never spent any time studying how compilers work, I strongly recommend it because it begins to make a lot of the compiler's error messages make more sense. And you get a much greater appreciation for the level of engineering sophistication that goes into a modern compiler. But more importantly, you start beginning to see that a lot of the problems that we wrestle with in a lot of the projects that we work on can actually be solved through various pieces that we see living inside of a compiler. Most web validation is actually a parsing problem. And regex is a pretty limited general purpose parser. In many cases, it would actually be clearer and easier if you just sat down and wrote a grammar and then did a transformation of the grammar into source code using a tool like Antler, and then just use that code and think about things in terms of the grammar. This is a huge field. The iceberg is definitely large beneath the surface of the waves, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff that's going on out there.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to promote?
Well, I mentioned them earlier, and I don't want to get too Smartsheet-y, but if you're looking for a tool to manage your Agile backlog in, Smartsheet.com, give it a look. We actually have a developer license for people who want to give it a spin. It's a good project management tool.
My guest today has been Ted Neward. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, sir.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2017. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Audacity, Skype, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy the music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com to submit your name and idea.
Yep. Okay. Reviewed by the cats. Sure. Oh. Your logic is irrefutable. I see. Ha ha.